Picture the ramp at any airport you've ever flown into. Look down the line of jets parked at the gates. Airbus, Boeing, it doesn't matter. Squint a little, and they all look like the same airplane. Tube fuselage, swept wing hung underneath. Two engines, that basic shape has barely moved in 60 years. Now imagine one with a wing so long and so thin it looks like a sailplane got bolted to an airliner. And halfway out that impossibly skinny wing, there's a strut running down to the belly like something you'd see on a bush plane. That's the airplane I want to talk about today. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct, the show where we take the technology that's coming for aviation and pull it apart to see what's actually inside. Today we're talking about the Boeing X-66, the transonic truss-braced wing, and one of the most interesting bets anybody has made on what the next airliner is going to look like. Let's break this down before we climb in. A word about the folks helping keep this segment in the air. This one is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey, one coin at a time, beautifully made, heavy in the hand, and built to last a career. If you've got a milestone worth remembering, or somebody in your life who just hit one, go take a look. AviationSoul.com, okay? Let's start with the basic problem. Because every piece of this airplane is an answer to one stubborn question. How do you make a wing more efficient? Here's the thing most people miss about wings. A long, skinny wing is more efficient than a short, fat one. Full stop. That's why a glider has those enormous, slender wings that seem to go on forever, and your average trainer doesn't. Engineers measure this with a number called aspect ratio. It's just the wingspan compared to the width of the wing. The chord high aspect ratio means long and skinny. Low aspect ratio means short and stubby. The data tells an interesting story here. A high aspect ratio wing makes a lot less of what we call induced drag. That's the drag you create simply as a byproduct of making lift. Longer wings spill less energy off the wingtips, so they drag less, so they burn less fuel. A sailplane can have an aspect ratio north of 30. It sips altitude away so slowly it can stay up all day on nothing but rising air. So why doesn't your airliner have glider wings? Because a long, skinny wing has a nasty problem. It wants to bend, and it wants to flex and twist and flutter. A wing is a cantilever beam, sticking out from the fuselage with nothing holding up the far end. The longer you make it, the more it flexes, and the more structure you have to pack inside it to keep it from folding up or shaking itself apart. That structure is weight. And past a certain point, the weight you add to stiffen the long wing cancels out the fuel you saved by making it long in the first place. That's the wall engineers have been stuck behind for decades. The tube and wing airliner sitting at your gate is a compromise. Its wing is exactly as long as Boeing and Airbus could make it before the weight penalty ate the efficiency gain. They've been nibbling at the edges, winglets, raked tips, new materials, but the fundamental shape hasn't moved, because the physics wouldn't let it. So here's the idea behind the airplane we're talking about. What if you didn't have to hold that long wing up with structure buried inside it? What if you propped it up from underneath with a strut? That's the truss-braced wing. And it is a genuinely old idea wearing brand new clothes. Think about a Piper Cub, a Cessna 172, a de Havilland Beaver. Look at how the wing is held on. There's a strut, a diagonal brace running from partway out on the wing down to the bottom of the fuselage. That strut carries load. It lets the wing be lighter, because the wing isn't doing all the work of holding itself up alone. High-wing airplanes have used struts since the dawn of aviation. It's about as proven as engineering gets. The catch has always been speed. A strut sitting out in the wind makes drag. At the speeds a cub flies, who cares? At the speeds an airliner flies close to Mach 0.8, roughly 80% of the speed of sound, that strut becomes a problem. The air over it starts going supersonic in patches, you get shockwaves, and the drag penalty explodes. For most of aviation history, the conventional wisdom was simple. You do not put a strut on a fast airplane. It's a low-speed trick. Here's what changed. Computational fluid dynamics got good, really good. Engineers can now model the airflow over a shape at transonic speed down to a resolution that was pure fantasy 30 years ago. And when they went back and asked the question, could you shape a strut carefully enough that it behaves itself at high speed, the answer that came back was, maybe yes. That's the whole game. Transonic. Truss braced. A strut carefully shaped to survive going nearly the speed of sound, holding up a wing far longer and thinner than anything you've ever seen on a jet that size. Let me give you the numbers, because this is where it gets impressive. Boeing's design has a wingspan of around 170 feet. That is wider than a 737, wider than a 757, in the territory of the much bigger jets, but it's stretched over a narrow-body airplane, the kind that flies your average domestic route. The aspect ratio is way up in the range where you start borrowing from the sailplane playbook. And Boeing, and the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, believe that wing, combined with the engines and the systems of the 2030s, could cut fuel burn and emissions by up to 30% compared to today's best narrowbodies. 30%. Sit with that in a business where a shiny new engine variant fights for 2 or 3%, where entire multi-billion dollar programs are justified by single-digit fuel savings. Somebody is claiming 30. That is not an incremental number. That is the kind of number that, if it's real, forces every competitor to respond. So who's actually building this thing, and where does the X-66 come in? NASA has a program called the Sustainable Flight Demonstrator. The goal is to fly full-scale, at real speed, the airframe technology that could go into the next single-aisle lander. In 2023, NASA picked Boeing to build it. And rather than draw a clean-sheet jet on a blank page, which would cost a fortune and take forever, they did something clever. They're taking an existing airplane and rebuilding it. The donor aircraft is a McDonnell Douglas MD-90. An old, out-of-service narrowbody, twin engines mounted on the tail. Boeing is stripping it down and grafting on an entirely new wing. That long, high, skinny, truss-braced wing, mounted on top of the fuselage, with the strut running down to the belly. New wing, new systems to go with it, and the existing fuselage and tail to save time and money. When it's done, that airplane gets the designation X-66. And that X matters. The X series is the lineage of American experimental aircraft. The X-1 that broke the sound barrier. The X-15 that kissed the edge of space. The X-66 is the first X-plane NASA has assigned specifically to airliner efficiency. That tells you how seriously they're taking it. Now, let's be honest about the hard parts, because I promised you balanced, and I meant it. This is not a solved airplane. It's an experiment, and experiments have real risks. The first one is flutter. That long, flexible wing is going to bend and move in flight far more than a stiff, conventional wing. Engineers actually want some of that flex, because a wing that bends can absorb gusts and ride turbulence more smoothly. But flex and flutter are neighbors. Flutter is the nightmare, a self-feeding oscillation where the wings bending and twisting couple together and reinforce each other until, in the worst case, the structure fails. Predicting exactly where flutter shows up on a wing this long and this novel, at transonic speed, is genuinely hard. A big part of what the X-66 exists to do is go find those edges carefully, with instrumentation and flight test discipline, so nobody has to find them by surprise later. The second hard part is that strut, the very thing that makes the whole concept work. Get its shape slightly wrong, and the transonic drag you were trying to avoid comes right back and eats your efficiency gain. The junction where the strut meets the wing, and where it meets the fuselage, those intersections are aerodynamically brutal. Air doesn't like flowing through tight corners at high speed. Managing the airflow through those joints, in the real world, in real air, not just in the computer, is one of the central questions the flight test program has to answer. Third, there's the airport problem, and this one is very practical. A 170-foot wingspan is wide. Airport gates, taxiways, and ramps are sized into categories. And a wing that long can bump a narrow body up into a bigger, more expensive category that doesn't fit the gates airlines already use. Boeing has floated the idea of folding wingtips to solve it. And that's a real, workable answer. But it's also more weight, more mechanism, more things to inspect and maintain. Nothing in engineering is free. Every gain buys you a new bill somewhere else. And fourth, the honest timeline. This is where I have to slow you down if you're getting excited. The X-66 is a demonstrator, one airplane. Even in the best case, it flies, it gathers data, and that data feeds into a decision years down the road about whether to launch an actual commercial airplane. The program has already slipped. Ground testing and first flight have moved to the right, which is completely normal for a project this ambitious, but it means the flying is happening later than first advertised, and even after it flies successfully, you're looking at the 2030s, realistically the back half of the 2030s, before anything shaped like this could be carrying passengers, if it ever does. This is not an airplane you'll book a ticket on soon, it's a bet on what the airplane after next might be. So why does any of this matter to us, the people who actually fly? Because this is how the airplanes we take for granted got here. The winglet on your Cessna, the glass panel in your cockpit, the swept wing on every jet, all of it started as somebody's risky experiment that most of the industry thought was too clever by half. The X-planes are where the industry does its hard thinking out loud, at full scale, with real airplanes and real test pilots. Some of them lead nowhere. Some of them quietly change everything you fly for the rest of your life. And here's what I keep coming back to as an engineer. The truss-braced wing isn't some exotic breakthrough that fell out of the sky. It's an old, humble idea. The strut on a Piper Cub, dragged forward 50 years and pointed at a problem everyone assumed was closed. Somebody looked at the compromise sitting at every gate in the world and refused to accept that the tube and wing was the final answer. That's the part I love. Progress in this business usually isn't a bolt of lightning. It's someone asking why the old wall is still standing, and finding out the wall moved when nobody was looking. Whether the X-66 itself becomes a production airplane, honestly, I don't know. And anybody who tells you they're certain is selling something, but the questions it's asking are the right ones. And the answers, whatever they are going to shape the wing over your head for a long time. My thanks to NASA and to Boeing for the program details, and to the flight test community that puts real airplanes to the real questions. If you want to see photos of that skinny wing for yourself, it's worth a look. You can find more from us over at RadioHangar.com. That's the airplane. A Cub strut going 80% of the speed of sound, trying to save you a third of your fuel. Keep your eyes on it. I'm Vector, and this has been Clear Direct.